Oh, that's right. Sounds like a little grooving in the afternoon. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here this afternoon, and I have David Redd. He is an instructor of physics at Lander University and has been named the first recipient of the Moore Award for Excellence in General Education Teaching. I tell you what, anybody that can keep somebody interested has my attention. And Dr. David Redd, it's nice to have you on the show this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But just so that it doesn't seem like I'm lying, I'm not a doctor.
Oh,
I'm just
see,
David
see,
Redd. Yeah.
Look, see, Lauren wrote that there.
That's my fault, probably. I should have, but I don't want Lauren to be in trouble.
Okay.
But no, I'm not a doctor.
You're not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
So full disclosure.
Full disclosure here this afternoon.
Yeah.
It sounds like you must just be a darn good professor, though.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, you teach physics over there at Lander, and you've been there, what, how many years?
13.
Is that lucky or unlucky this year?
Oh, well, I guess the number is traditionally unlucky. I'd say overall I'm lucky to be there.
Yeah.
It's no job is perfect, but there are a lot of there definitely are some positives to it. I would say that the dean and the chair are both very supportive of me and what I do, so I'm very happy about that. Having a good boss makes life better.
Yeah. Dave Slimmer?
Yes, he's the dean.
Yes,
yeah.
We know Dave Slimmer very well.
I know. Hey,
did he tell you what to say and not to say on the show?
No, he didn't, actually. He didn't. He might be listening.
Yeah.
He might be listening, so I can't say, right?
Okay.
I really can't say.
Yeah, we at Sharp Facets donated a huge mineral collection, minerals and specimens and a safe and everything over to Lander a few years ago.
I know. I was talking to your husband earlier. I helped move it in.
I
was one of the labor crew that helped move
the
thing in there. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's
great.
It
was quite a heavy safe.
Yeah, it was quite a heavy safe and quite a collection. So,
yes, it was. Thank you.
Yeah. No, it was... we love doing that type of thing. And, you know, when you talk to somebody about how they get into education, a lot of people kind of backdoor into it. It's not really what they think the direction they're going, but they end up there. And so many times they find that they love it. How did you think you were going to be an educator when you were growing up?
Not at all. No, not at all. I would say that I don't know, this wasn't a category in the high school yearbook of things that people are likely or not likely to do, but I think I would have been in the running for no chance of being a teacher in the future. I think most of the teachers disliked me. Not all of them, but I was a thorn in their side to some extent. So no, it was a definite no.
And yet you said you'd be in the running for, and that's what you wanted to do.
To run, yes, yes. That's
Did
how
you
I
notice
went to
that?
Yes,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, tell us about, you wanted to run. You actually got a scholarship, correct?
Yes, that was, so I was saying before the interview began, yeah, I went to LaSalle, and the reason I chose that school was it was the best track program that gave me any kind of scholarship. And I quickly learned that I was on the low end of that totem pole. So I very much enjoyed it. Being part of that team was really very important to me, really, in the long term. But I was not a particularly great or gifted runner. A lot of people on that team were. So,
well, you wanted to be on the Olympics, right?
That was my, you know, leaving high school, I had no direction whatsoever in life. I didn't want to be anything. I didn't want to be an engineer. I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't really have, not that I was against those things. I just didn't have I really want to be this.
How did your parents feel about that?
I think they were happy that I was leaving, so they were okay.
Leaving home?
Leaving home, yeah.
Okay.
No, they were okay as long as I supported myself. I was the first one to go to college, so they were extremely proud of that. They were extremely proud. My mom really should have been in college, but financial opportunities at the time were much different in her day than they were in mine, and they've changed yet again. So she never could go, and she was very, very happy about that part. And then my younger sisters both went after me, too.
Wow. So what did your dad do?
My dad he did engineering work, actually, but he didn't go to college. He was trained through the Navy.
Wow.
So he went straight into the Navy, got trained that way, and then after that had a naval certificate that allowed him to work as an engineer.
PE.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he was educated in that sense, but not formally through a college or a university
Well, I guess they were very proud that you did, even though it was going for running and to run in the Olympics.
Yeah, that was the pipe dream that was never going to happen. I learned that really, really quickly, that I was not anywhere near good enough for that. But it was still a great... It was the kind of thing where it's better to be lucky than good, because I made a decision on where to go to college on a really flimsy pretense, but it worked out beautifully. I don't think I could have chosen better. Everything at LaSalle went very... I don't know that it could have gone better for me in terms of how that worked out for me in the long run.
So in today's world, you have to pretty much know what you're going to do in the sixth or seventh grade.
Seems that way. Yes.
For you, since the only thing you thought you wanted to do was to run, mm-hmm. what were you thinking, or how did you choose to be in teaching?
So at LaSalle, I did have to eventually choose a major of some sort, right? And I had done well in math and physics courses, so I majored in those. I tried to triple major and get a degree in English, but I ran out of money and that just didn't happen. And so I lost myself. Well, you were asking me why I chose teaching. Mm-hmm. So when college was done, I still didn't really want a job. So I went to grad school, and that's a pretty good deal in something like physics because it's so well funded that you're not living on loans. They pay you to be a TA.
To be a right.
So I continued that avenue, and in doing so was forced to teach. Not that I was opposed to it, but that wasn't something I went into it for. And being a teaching assistant, I was terrible at the start, really awful. The kind of reason you don't want to send your kids to big schools that have TAs. But I got much better at it, and I really started to like it. So the teaching thing for me began in graduate school as a TA, where somewhere around the end of the first semester, I started to feel much more comfortable with it, and really enjoyed it after that.
What's the best part of teaching?
Well, I would say, so the best version of it, actually today, I would say, I taught a class earlier today. It's a small class. There's 7 students in it, and they are pretty good group overall. One of them in particular, though, is kind of the ideal, the way that I think education somewhat should go, where she's doing very well. Obviously, I want that. But it's not because it's easy for her, and it's not because she's seen so much before and her background is so great that it's a breeze mm-hmm. for her. It's because she's engaged the whole time. She pays attention every second, and not because it's a chore, but because her mind is active. She asks good questions all the time. Actually, about 3/4 of her questions function as perfect segues for what I was about to do next because she's asking the next logical question. So I can see that she's catching it as it should be caught. Mm-hmm. And so that's fun when you can see that someone is really getting it and catching on to what you're talking about.
When the light bulbs are on.
Yeah, and hers is on pretty much continuously. I don't know, she's probably not listening, but can I say her name? I was just going to give her a shout out. Her name is Chanel Sanders. She's a Lander student. She's really great.
What's she majoring in?
Exercise science, although it might not be exactly that. It might be some version of it, like kinesiology or exercise, something along those lines. I believe she wants to be something in the athletic trainer area.
That's a popular area today.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty good. Well, so that's the good part is when you have engaged students.
Yes.
Now, what about the other side of the coin?
Well, the other side of the coin certainly has to occur, right? If you teach enough people, there certainly are going to be some that are not particularly engaged. Mm-hmm. That is where I think it's in my advantage that I was such a bad high school student because I am that kid.
So you understand it?
It's just talking to myself a little bit, all right? I'm just trying to convince, when I'm trying to convince that kid, half the time I'm just trying to convince the version of me that used to be to pay attention. And so I do use a lot of, well, I would call them gimmicks pretty directly.
Reputation precedes you. Lauren knows you and she's had you in class and
yeah,
she does.
I do a lot of demonstrations. So I do a lot of gimmicks and the main gimmick is the demonstration thing. Now that's not purely a gimmick, so to speak, in that a lot of people do it, but I do it pretty much every day, usually at least one a day, sometimes more. Some of them are big and flashy and it's hard to fall asleep when someone is on a bed of nails and someone else is beating on them. Or when I detonate something. So it's pretty much impossible to fall asleep through. Others are smaller and more subtle. But that's, I would say, the main thing that I do. I also just, because half the battle, I think, is just keeping people's attention. I don't think that they can't learn. I think that they, as long as they're attentive, they're going to get most of what I'm saying.
Don't you think it's different in today's world than the way it was even 10 years ago? I mean, have you seen a difference in the kids that maybe 13 years ago versus today?
The single biggest difference, honestly, is the phone. The use of phones. Wherein I can, even for me, I'm not that old, but I've been at Lander long enough that at the beginning I'd walk into a class and they're all talking to each other. So for me to start things, I have to get them to stop, which isn't difficult typically. Right. But I do have to do it. And now they're not. They are all individually looking down at their phone. They are rarely, it's not a loud scene.
They're not engaged with each other. They're engaged with their phone.
They're engaged with the phone. So it's a bit different that way, in that my first initial thing is to get them to look up rather than to get them to look over.
Right.
Right. So that is the biggest single difference, I would say. But in terms of, there is a bit of a difference maybe in terms of overall trying to keep their attention. And the phone is part of that, because if it's on their desk, which I don't generally allow, but in a classroom, if there are 80 people in there and it's stadium seating, I cannot legitimately see where 80 phones are located relative to the people in a stadium setting.
Sure.
So I do have to work to keep their attention somehow. And the demonstrations are the biggest way. And really doing anything odd and out of place helps keep their attention. Because what they expect, and so if I just stand there and walk back and forth slowly and in the same voice all the time,
you've definitely lost them.
I'm going to lose them. There's no question. And if they're not attentive, that's the end of the battle. So other than the demonstrations, which are the main trick, I will just do something odd, like when someone does answer a question or ask a really good question, I will give out prizes. That's fairly random. I can't do it for every interaction because I'd run out of money.
I understand you have a bell, which reminds me, we're going to have to hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. It is a very hot afternoon this afternoon, folks. That's right. We're supposed to be up to 99 degrees here today. Let's just go ahead and see. Looks like feels like 99. They say it's actually 96 out there, and we are looking for, oh my goodness, it is going to be just as hot tomorrow. And tomorrow and tomorrow. That's right. Friday looks like there's a 30% chance of rain, but we're still looking for about 96 degrees. So keep it cool out there. Keep it right here on WCRS. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. And this afternoon, my very special guest is David Redd. He's an instructor of physics at Lander University. He's the first recipient of the Moore Award for Excellence in General Education Teaching. Now, what does that award mean, since you're the first recipient?
Well, as far as I know, so it means that they are specifically rewarding or trying to reward someone for teaching courses that are not designed for a major. So just courses that are in the general education curriculum. Now, obviously, people teach both,
right?
Courses that count for both. Sometimes I teach classes that do count for majors. But they are specifically saying the teaching you've done in this area, not all of it, but just this specific thing. So I think, honestly, they were trying to come up with more awards to give faculty, and they came up with this one.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, this was the Moore Award. Who is this award named for?
Philosophy professor at Lander, John Moore.
Oh, okay.
He's been there quite a long time. I don't know him very well. I mean, I certainly recognize him. We know who each other are.
Right.
We're not mortal enemies. We used to be. We squashed that, you know. So we used to be mortal enemies, but now we're on okay terms. He's a very, very nice gentleman. Very knowledgeable too.
That's really great. Now, where does physics fall as far as a class at Lander? Is it something you need for basic classes?
So as far as no, most people don't need to take it. There is a general education requirement, which this falls under. Where everyone must take two lab science courses, and this is, so physics is one of them. So there's geology, physics, chemistry, biology. So they must take two. And so one of the classes that I teach fairly routinely is one of those.
And how do your students react to physics? Do they think, is it considered an easier course than a biology course?
Or? No, most of them are looking at that entire menu as picking amongst the least evil.
Right.
I mean, nothing on the menu looks appealing to them. I would say that most students don't like their general education requirements, period, but the science and math versions in particular. I don't think, that they generally walk into this course particularly happy about it, but they look at it as something that they have to do.
Does your reputation precede you?
I don't know. I hear it does, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I hear that it does, but that still doesn't mean everyone walks in without some. Many people still walk in with a lot of anxiety about it because they know that there's going to be math involved, and they have a general phobia over math and science.
Yeah. So how many classes do you end up teaching each semester?
My standard contract is 5. Mm-hmm. It's pretty common that I have an overload, though, so 5 or 6.
5 or 6.
Yeah. Now, that includes, we count, a lab section counts as one of those. So it's 5 or 6 total things, meaning lectures and labs combined.
Okay. And physics in Lander, it's not a major, is it?
We do not have a physics major, no.
Okay.
We are a fairly small school. You need a certain number of people to support that, essentially. We wouldn't have enough majors to do it. And that's actually a national trend that's been going on for quite a long time, where the smaller schools have been dropping the physics major because it requires a fair amount of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cost to it, and not that many students want to do it. So if you have students if you're going to spend a lot of money on equipment and faculty and you have 6 people that you're graduating, it just doesn't work out economically. So it's been an ongoing trend where the bigger schools have been soaking up all the physics majors and the smaller schools have been dropping it altogether. I was actually, the school I went to, LaSalle, they dropped the physics major when I was there. I was the last one. I am the last physics major from LaSalle University.
How does that feel to be the last physics major from LaSalle?
No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. No, it was interesting. It's another thing that I would say. At LaSalle, some of the faculty did a lot for me. The university wanted to shut that major down because it was losing the money, but I didn't know that they were doing that, and I signed up for it before they shut it down. So they were then, in some sense, legally obligated to keep it for me, because when I signed or when I paid my money, that was among the list of options.
Sure.
So effectively, that's like a contract saying, pay us money, and you can do any of these things. And
right.
I chose one. So they had to keep it open. Now, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they were going to have to. So I would have just said, okay, I'll do something else. But the faculty there said, no, you have to keep it open just for him. So Professor Bert Strieb is the main person who went to the administration and said, no, you have to let him do it. And then they shut it down for everybody after me.
How about that?
Yeah, so that made it
hard.
Was
it a lonely class?
Yeah.
Were you the only student?
In many classes. Not all of them, but in many. You can't hide. Every question is right at you. And there's really, you can't miss class.
Right.
Right? I mean, you can't
be off. It's
a
lot of pressure.
Well, it is. The people that helped, though, the faculty were really nice about it. So they understood that I was just sitting there alone and that's kind of a rough position to be in, potentially. So they were very good about that and not expecting me to know every answer all the time. But on the other hand, it was really good training. I mean, I had to be on top of things or it was going to be really embarrassing pretty much every day. So I didn't have a lot of choice.
Do you think that developed more of a passion for it because you really had to know everything?
Well, yes. It also developed, I guess, in that I'm pretty stubborn. It became kind of a challenge. It became a challenge in the sense of, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to answer every question. So I better know what I'm doing, and I don't want to look like an idiot tomorrow. So I did pay attention to what I had to do the night before. I did read over things. I tried everything. I was I mean, it didn't mean I could answer every question, but I thought that I could at least respond in a way that didn't make me seem like a total idiot.
And it also was a matter of respect, I would think.
Yes, they had done a lot for me. Yeah. So I really didn't say no to anything they asked me to do. Mm-hmm. So one of the classes, that same professor, Bert Strieb, thought should be 2 semesters in a standard curriculum. The university, because they were battling over this whole situation, said, well, we'll give you 1. And he couldn't fight it any more than that, so he said, well, you really need double the time that you're getting on this. So instead of an 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock class like normal, we're just going to come in unofficially at 7 every day. So we're going to go 7 to 9 instead of 8 to 9, and we're going to get this 2 semesters done for you in 1 so that you're prepared for graduate school. Because I don't want you leaving here not knowing what you're doing and making us look bad.
That's really a great professor that
we was great. He was extremely dedicated. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, I tell you what, we're going to join South Carolina News in Progress. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here this afternoon. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. I have been entertained over here. All kinds of demonstrations off the air. I wish we could show some of them because they are just so fantastic and so phenomenal. You actually come across almost as a magician here, David. I'm talking to David Redd, an instructor of physics at Lander. Yeah, you almost are a magician here. Yeah,
yeah.
I tell you what, physics does fall into the magical stuff sometimes, doesn't it?
It does seem to, yeah, but I think it's actually more fun or more enjoyable for people when they know why it does work. Mm-hmm. So when I lay on a bed of nails, for example, I do it so that they understand why
it's
safe.
You have a bed of nails?
We do at Lander have a bed of nails. It's
okay.
It's great.
It's great?
Well, no, it's not a common item. It's not an item that most physics departments have. It's an
uncommon
thing.
How did you end
up
with the bed of nails?
Do you know John Kynard, the local physics teacher at Greenwood High?
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, evidently, so this is the story I'm told. Many years ago, he had a class build it essentially as extra credit. I think each student had to put some number of nails into the thing.
Okay.
Right? And so they created it. He was basically getting ready to retire and clean stuff out. That's his thing. It's his property. He paid for the nails, the board.
Right.
So he was getting rid of it, and he gave it to us. So now we have it, and the dean, Slimmer, and I are the two that we're really the only ones that use it at this point, but I use it a lot. I like it quite a bit. But it is fun to see someone use it, but it's also, I think, better for them when they actually understand why it's okay. Same thing with the demonstration that's in that photograph that was in the newspaper, the why my hand isn't burnt.
Right.
So, yes, if you just see that, it looks like some form of magic, maybe, that your hand is magically okay.
Right.
But it's not magic. It has to do with the high specific heat capacity of water. So they see me do that. They see me coat my hand with water. I explain why water is so good at this particular thing, absorbing heat without a large increase in temperature, and that's why it's safe. So I think that's even better. Sorry.
Okay. No, I was going to ask, do you ever have any students that decide to go out and try these experiments on their own?
Well, that's a danger. That's a risk, right? Yes. That's a possible risk. Now, the one with the fire on the hand, that is the one that is probably the one that they are most likely to try because they would be more able to come up with the equipment, so to speak. This really just involves water, soap that's been diluted with water. None of that, dish soap, none of that's difficult. Gas, which I, of course, in the classroom have a nice gas line that runs out of a nice controlled jet. They don't have something that's quite that controlled. So if they tried it, that's where I'd worry, that they would connect a tube to something like a propane tank, not control that very well. But short of that, it would work.
Yes.
Yes. And so there are some dangers possibly to that. I mean, I do explain everything very thoroughly as to why it works. So far, so good. So far, no one that I know of has been hurt doing anything, trying to replicate anything that I do. In class.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just wondering because I happen to know of a group of West Point students who were taking a class and they decided to find out if you really could light farts.
Uh-huh. And they got themselves hurt that
way. Yes, they burnt their butts.
Yeah,
yes.
That can be a problem. But see, I don't do that one in class. That's
You don't light your parts?
That's
good.
Not something that I do in class. And I think if you're going to get yourself hurt, you're probably going to do it with or without my instruction.
Right.
So
yeah.
If anything, maybe I could convince myself that me explaining why something works means that they're less likely to get hurt doing something in the future. Maybe.
Okay. Right. All right. I mean, I just was, you know, because
you
see these type of things, and I'm sure kids are going, wow, well, that would be great for entertainment properties.
I do. Yeah. There are some that are smaller scale that are not dangerous, right, that they could do that involve household things like playing cards and that kind of thing that they could do pretty easily, and that would at least be like a mild 2-minute party trick.
Right.
And have no danger whatsoever. So maybe they stick with those.
Okay.
I recommend those, I guess.
I just wondered if before you did something like this, you said, please don't try this at home, professionals only.
I mean, I can say it, but they don't hear
that. They don't hear that?
People don't hear warnings too much anyway. So they, I will let them try some things in class also. So many of the students at Lander have tried that exact trick with the fire and the bubbles, but I'm there.
Right.
Right. So they see it done. And that is the kind of thing that's also hard. If another student is doing it also, it's very hard for the other students to not watch that and not pay attention to it. And they'll see that the water is coating their hand and that that matters and that that's why they don't get burnt. So hopefully they see that part.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, you know, physics does have a lot of validity in our everyday lives. And you, of course, got this award for your general education award because you have all these different mythologies that you use to try to keep them interested. Now, we've talked a little bit about the demonstrations. That's one part of it. We've talked that you do have a bell and you do prizes if they answer the correct question. Mm-hmm. I actually got a present here today. I'm not really sure for what. I guess maybe for having you on the show here today.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate it very much. It's a little 5-year-old drew a narwhal here, and that's pretty cool.
Well, and it supported her, too. She had her own little business outside my neighbor's house selling pictures for 25 cents. So it supported her. You get a picture. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. That's right. Plus, it's a narwhal, which is just totally unbelievable. And I asked you if y'all had the narwhal over there at Lander.
We do. Yes. Yeah, we do. I don't use it that much in classes because it's not a physics thing exactly.
Right.
It's just really cool. So I do enjoy seeing it around, but it is an amazing, it's my height. I mean, it's enormous.
It is huge. Yeah. And Mr. Barnes from out there at Wesley Commons donated it. And I knew about it because we did part of the write-up in order for him to be able to donate it. So
the appraisal,
here at Sharp Facets, correct. Yeah. Well, what other things do you like to use, David, to keep your students interested in today's world?
Well, I try to do, so the...
We've got two, the demonstrations and we've got the prizes.
Those are the, yes, I do those things. I will also generally tell little stories that are meant to be things that they actually did happen, things that did occur. And then we will, usually something very odd, very strange, and then we explain some physics that's related to it, right? So there are a handful of little stories that I use for that. The downside of that is that it does use up a little bit of class time. Usually the stories, I try to keep it to a minute or two, and then we do problems based on what happened in the story. And one thing that's nice about that is I'll describe something, and then we'll say, okay, what information do you need to solve this? And then we'll have to think about what are reasonable values for the mass of a human head, or the mass of this, or the velocity of a pellet as it leaves a pellet gun, and I'll have to ask them, so what's a reasonable number for that? And, you know, that's a bit of an exercise all by itself for them, especially since we're using the metric system a lot, right? And those are things that a lot of people don't have a good feel for, what is a normal velocity for something in meters per second, or a mass in kilograms. So we'll go through that that's a bit of the exercise all by itself. And then we'll get into the actual problem-solving part that's involved.
You know, my husband, Jeff, you've met him, and he is great at, if you want to know the velocity of whatever, if you have some historical question, Jeff is the repository of information, okay? And it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But most of today's students that we talk to, Jeff will just say, you know, they'll say, well, I'll look it up, and they'll Google it, you know, and they'll get the mm-hmm. answer. How does that work in relation to physics? I mean, do you have to know this stuff, or can you actually look it up?
Well, so what we emphasize in class all the time is the ability to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. So for them, and even for me, knowing the specific muzzle velocity of a pellet gun is not something that I really do need to memorize.
Correct.
So generally speaking, I don't require them to memorize a lot of information like that. But it is helpful to have at least a ballpark idea as to what things should be.
Because can't it gives I just a sense Google of scale. It and get the answer?
You can for that, but that's not the problem, right? So so that is part of what we would do. So I would say, okay, well, let's come up with a reasonable number for this and we'll use it. But then that number is just used along the way in the problem. So the main body of it is not that part. That is just basically like a
it's
side piece.
It's not stuff you can't look up on Google?
The velocity of a pellet is, yes.
Right, but
then once we
the
use
problem?
That, right, you could not look up that problem. So you could not look up the solution to something like, so in that particular problem, the question involves a situation that occurred when I was about 15 and my cousin shot me in the face with a pellet gun, point blank.
I read about this, yes.
Right. And so I will use that as a problem and say, okay, the problem occurs afterwards and saying, okay, well, how fast does my head move to the side as a result of the impact of the pellet? That isn't something that you could look up ever. You would have to know how to solve the problem and you would need data to go into that problem, things like the mass of the pellet, the mass of my head. No jokes, okay? No jokes about the mass of my head. But
he does have a big head, guys.
I do have a very, yeah. Well, yeah, it's more lumpy than anything else.
Lumpy
but
head.
So we
perhaps
so we,
the pellet.
The pellet was lodged right there. And actually, that's interesting because that does kind of play into the problem because at the end, you end up having to use the combined mass of the pellet in my head as one of the numbers that goes in. So you need both individually. They get summed as part of the problem-solving process. So the main thing is...
No wonder they're scared about doing this class.
Yeah, they think that they could be used in that form of demonstration.
Exactly.
So the main part of it is the problem-solving, which could never be looked up in Google.
Okay, because I thought everything was in Google.
I mean, you can look up, it's basically that would be looking in a textbook for how to solve this kind of problem, but there would be no exact match.
I was being facetious.
No, I know.
Okay. All right, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Don't you go away. I am here with David Redd, an instructor of physics at Lander University. We'll be right back.
They say every kiss begins with, but at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices. And smooch-able results.
Oh, that's right. See, I just noticed your name, David Z. Redd. What does the Z stand for?
Oh, the Z stands for Zale.
Are you part of the Zales Corporation?
No, I am not a competitor of Sharp Facets Gallery in any way. No, the name comes from, it was a childhood friend of my father's that died in a motorcycle accident when they were youngish. Young,
wow.
Not so young that they weren't on motorcycles.
Right.
So it comes from that. He wanted it to be my first name. My mom didn't really go with that, so they settled on a middle name.
Well, that's nice. That's
like
a nice name. Yeah.
I like having the Z there. Yeah.
It stands out.
It does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So you noticed it just now.
Yeah, that's right.
I
hadn't seen it, but yeah, like, wow, what is a Z name that...
Right, and for the Russian guy I lived with in college, it sounded like he was calling me The Red, because he was a Z, you know, that the word the came out of Z for him, so David Z. Red.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, let's see. So you are a professor at Lander. Mm-hmm. Now, are you looking forward to another year at Lander?
Yes, it should be... yeah, I am very much 14th year coming
14th
up.
14th year.
Yeah.
Do you ever think you need to mix it up? Like maybe you should go teach English or something for a change?
I would love to teach other things. But the state sets, and not just the state, but most accreditation boards set pretty strict guidelines on that. So, for example, I would love to teach math classes too.
Right.
And there are occasionally times where... You know, faculty contracts don't match up with the number of courses taught.
Right.
And so if there was a stray calculus class, I would have no one over there would really be worried about me not being able to do the calculus part.
Right.
but the rules are very strict, and I do not have the number of graduate credit hours that are called math.
Right.
Even though every graduate course in physics is heavy with math.
Correct.
They're not called math on the transcript, so I can't teach math at Lander. Wow. So it's not allowed. Same thing with the dean and other people, and crossing over in all areas is very much impossible.
That really is a shame. Yeah, particularly if you've been. Do you think that? Are you always looking for ways to make it new and fresh?
Yeah, that is half the reason why. That's the other reason, honestly, that demonstrations and things like that exist, and the weird little stories or the giving out prizes. Half of that is to keep me awake. Because if I just go in and do the same thing over and over again, that is just a recipe for everybody passing out, right?
Right.
Almost including me. The only reason I'd still be awake is I'm standing.
Right.
But that's boring. If I'm bored, there is no way that people in a classroom are going to not be bored also. So I have to do weird little things just for myself. So even if I have a demonstration that already works really well, if I have another one that works equally well, that's a value because it makes me more awake because I'm doing something newer for myself. It's never the case that I walk in and I've never done it before. I'll do it before class, obviously, but it's still new for me to do it in front of an audience. It's new for me to explain it directly.
Right.
And so that means I have to be more engaged and awake, and that hopefully keeps a couple people more awake too. But if I do the same old thing over and over again, even if it's good,
right,
I will get stale, and so will everybody else.
Well, I know in that is one of the things that I know kids look at when they're taking classes. If they know that they're going to have a professor or teacher that just follows the book and doesn't come up with any ideas or anything, it's a ho-hum class.
Yeah, and that's I can't disagree with that. I don't want to knock any faculty ever, but
right.
I can't disagree with that. And the notion of just reading PowerPoints or just reading the book, if I were the student, I would say, well, I'll just sit at home and read the book.
Right.
I can read a book. So if that's all you're going to do,
right,
then I'll just stay home and do that. So I also don't use a book anymore for most of my courses. Which,
you threw the book out?
To some extent, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of that is just the cost has gone so far up. And if it's a course for especially a general education course, it's different if it's in your major and it's something you're going to use later.
Right.
But if you're never going to use it again, it really isn't something that they're going to refer back to.
Right.
And $180 for a book that you use for 13 weeks and never look at again is another reason to dislike it. It's just another reason to hate the class,
right,
to dislike the subject, the
and
whole
thing.
And then
when you sell that book, you don't get anywhere near
that. Oh, you get nothing.
That.
That's almost useless. Right.
Right.
And so I don't use a book mainly because of the cost issue, but it also, I think, does force me to do my own my own version of things in the order that I want. I'm not feeling pressed to do this from a book and that from a book. Books are good in that they provide sample problems,
right,
for them to practice with. So that's a bit of a downside, but I just write those myself over time and then hand them out.
Now, futuristically, David, what would you like to do? You've been doing this.
Well,
this will coming up on the 14th year. What would you like to do?
Well, still running the Olympics. That's still the main
still
goal.
Yeah, are you still running?
I do run. I do run. There's obviously no chance of that, of the Olympic thing. I'm hoping, actually, I would love to go to the next Rio Olympics. That's on the can I save up enough money and make it there trip. And actually, a former Lander student might compete there from years ago.
Who's that?
Her name is Stacey Copeland. She's an English student, so she's in England now. She would be competing for England, not for the United States.
I thought you were talking about Cameron Dorn.
No, not him. Who knows? If they get triathlon in there, that would probably be his best shot.
Exactly.
Because burpees is probably not going to end up as a straight Olympic competition soon.
Probably not.
But, she might be competing in boxing for
boxing.
England. Yeah. She didn't obviously do that at Lander, so... But I would love to go. But as far as getting back to the real question,
yes.
I don't know, honestly. I'm pretty happy teaching. I do really like that. I wouldn't mind, you mentioned already, and this is peripherally related, the teaching of other things. Like, I can't teach math. I would love to do that. If I had a little more variety in what I could teach, that would make my daily work life a little bit better.
Sure.
For sure. Because Lander, without a physics major, is kind of limited that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I never teach quantum mechanics. We don't offer it. There's no reason I ever would. Right.
Right.
And so there are lots of things that I don't do or use that, just like everything else, atrophy and wither away. And that's not something that I'm particularly happy about.
Well, how about going back to school to be able to get certified in some other...
I mean, it's possible. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do that. They'd all have to be graduate hours, so there's a cost issue with that also, because it's not the kind of thing that Lander pays for. Mm-hmm. And so that comes out of my pocket, and I want to go to the Rio Olympics, okay, as I might have mentioned. So no, I would consider doing it, but it becomes a matter of there's so many things that I would like to do with time and money.
Right.
It really, the Rio thing is kind of, that would cost me a good chunk of money. Absolutely. And I wouldn't be able to do both.
Right.
So saying I might want to go to the Rio Olympics means if I were to do that, I'm looking 2 years down the line.
Right.
And that's already pushing things back, and who knows what happens in 2 years.
Correct. Right?
Lots of things come up in that time.
Exactly.
So,
well, I understand that you are a very big proponent of the Humane Society.
Yes, I do love the animals quite a bit. I like to volunteer at the Humane Society. That's a great place.
Gracie believes in the Humane Society.
I know Gracie's campaign is going well. She's been donating a lot of things there.
Right.
I've taken Lander students there occasionally for things like the American Chemical Society, the ACS Club. All those clubs, like SO, Environmental Science Club, you might be more familiar with them through Dr. Pardak, I'm not sure. But all those clubs do community service projects, so I will be the one that takes them to the Humane Society when they use that. They don't only do that. They will do Habitat for Humanity and other things too. But when they're going through the Humane Society, I'm usually the one that takes the Lander group to the Humane Society for cleaning, that kind of thing.
That's good. That's good. You know, we've talked around and we've talked a little bit about it, and we are coming up on the end of the show, but I would just like to know what you think of the future of education and our students today and futuristically. I realize this is a big question, and before I let you answer it, I'm going to tell everybody that they are listening right here on WCRS right here in Greenwood. But I worry about the fact that education, is it meeting the needs of the students? Do they need the general education? There's a big conversation about whether they need general education or is more specific technical schools. And you are listening to WCRS, and I am here with David Z. Red right here. And I would like your answer as we finish up this show.
Okay. So specifically... is general education needed? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to rephrase?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it is. However, there are some downsides to it, but overall it is, and I would say it is just because of the rate of change that occurs, that in all things now, driven by technology, but with pretty much everything, the rate of change is rapid enough that learning one skill makes it very difficult for you to stay employable permanently, because that one skill is probably not going to suit you too well 20 years from now, or there's at least a good chance that skill is not going to be very applicable to you. So you're going to have to be retrained in something. And without a broad base of ability, that's going to make that more difficult. So in my view, and this is actually, I would say, the main thing is that people just need to be able to read really, really well. If you can read really well, then you can do pretty much everything. And I see most people's educational problems as, unless it's very specific, if you're having problems with all kinds of stuff, it's probably a reading problem, because that's the one common element to all things educational. And I think being able to just read a diverse set of documents and be able to process that is really useful, and general education fairly well fits in line with that.
So we do need to concentrate more on the reading aspect in our lower grades.
I do. I mean, I obviously love math. I mean, I'm a math guy, really. But
you
I
never
still
would
think,
have known that by the beginning of your story, though.
Well, no, I know. Well, I do like math, but even as a math-based person, to some extent, I still think reading is the main fundamental thing. And when students complain in my classes that they're having trouble, and often trouble with math really isn't the trouble. The trouble really isn't with math. It's with the fact that they can't read the question properly enough to distill the information and put it into the equation. So when I give them the equation on paper, they manipulate it just fine. Mm-hmm. They can do the algebra, but they can't get from my statement to the
algebra
right
equation.
And so that's part of why I now actually write most of my tests, pretty much all of them, are in the form of long stories, where they read basically a paragraph that starts with Justin Bieber did this or Miley Cyrus did that, and I make up a little story that goes along with what they're doing, and they have to read that, find the information, and use it the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's my version of trying to make sure they can read to some extent. But I really think reading is extremely important.
Well, I think we all know that. I'm not sure sometimes that it's really addressed to that extent. You know, David Redd, I really appreciate you coming out this afternoon and spending the afternoon talking to us about education, your career, and what the what we need to concentrate on in school with our kids, which is one of those basics, reading.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. My very special guest today, David Redd, an instructor of physics at Lander University. And he was the first recipient of the Moore Award for Excellence in General Education Teaching. That's going to do it for us. I'll be back in the morning. Hey, don't forget, tomorrow morning, we're going to do an auction on the I Love Ann Show. Tune in and check out Facebook. Bye-bye, everybody.